Evening. We're about halfway finished with this book. How does it feel for you all? Are you doing well? Yes, no?
Sometimes I think that it's kind of the same.
Yes.
Last week, the one, just the short one, two stanzas, was a really interesting stuff with me all week. Well, some others may not.
Well, this week we are on number 20, I believe. Which is page 46.
Mm-hmm. One day he said, a person is said to have dull faculties when his determination is not thoroughgoing. When a worldly person falls from a horse, even before he hits the ground, various thoughts arise. When something happens that is so serious that one will injure his body or lose his life, anybody would use what intelligence he has by nature by learning to think what to do. At such a time, those of sharp faculties and those of dull faculties alike think of things and decide what is right.
Therefore, thinking that one may die tonight or die tomorrow, forming the idea that one is in a hopeless situation, in earnestly driving his determination on, one cannot fail to realize enlightenment. Rather than being superficially clever in worldly wisdom, it is the one who seems to be of dull faculties, yet who arouses a sincere determination, who quickly attains enlightenment. That the likes of Kuddha-pa-pa-pa-pa-ka, who lived when the Buddha was in the world, even though he could hardly recite even a single verse, because his root nature was earnest, he obtained realization in the course of one summer retreat.
Our lives are only here for now. As long as you study the Buddhist teachings with the earnest intent to obtain awakening before you die, there should be a single person who would fail to attain.
And Jane, you can read the note to the Kuddha Pantaka, which is on page 53.
Kuddha Pantaka, one of the Buddha's disciples, is representative of the most ignorant and stupid. Unable to remember any phrases of the teaching, he was given a broom by the Buddha. By concentrating on this, eventually he attained liberation.
There are so many times when I'm with somebody and somebody, it's somebody will make a mistake or forget something and say, oh, I'm such a dumbhead. Oh, I'm so stupid. Oh, what's the matter with me? And sometimes that really gets my goat. I think, don't abuse yourself that way. You know, you're precious. Don't be so down on yourself. I think we do that too much. Some of it is just left over from childhood, and as children we always teased each other about being stupid, and there was always that suspicion that we might not be up to snuff. But as we grow in the Dharma, our determination and our effort is to find our noble stature, to find our true respectability, which everyone has. IQ doesn't matter. Forgetfulness doesn't account. All the blundering and foolishness that permeates all of our lives is just human being. It's what we are. When I was new to practice, I felt very badly about myself. And one of the stories that kept me going was the Christian story, I don't know where I heard it, about the juggler who felt so badly because on a feast day everyone brought a gift to the Virgin in the church, and he didn't have anything to give. He was so impoverished. So he sneaked back at midnight and brought his juggling balls, and he juggled for the Virgin. And she leaned down and smiled. And that used to really help me get through a sesshin without falling apart. That there was something that was so hard to find, that preciousness of one's own life. We can wing it as we go about our life when we're busy. But when we sit down this way and begin to practice, all those doubts about our own life, all those doubts about our value arise. The beauty of this teaching, the depth of this teaching, is that it doesn't matter. That every great religion begins this way, or every great teaching begins this way. And in Buddhism, it happens over and over. Buddha brought in everybody, untouchables, women, butchers, murderers. Anyone could come. And then through the years, of course, it became more and more exclusive. We seem to do that. It seems to be part of the human condition that we have to become more and more exclusive and leave people out here and here and here, and just us special ones can do this. And then someone will come along and cut through all of that and open it up and bring it back to where the truth of it lies, which is where it lies with everyone. In terms of the truth, nobody is special. And each one is of tremendous value. Each one is precious. But he is talking here about determination too. And it reminds me of they send it to me for free, two quotes every week from Shambhala. And one is from a Tibetan practice book, and one is from the Dalai Lama. And somehow last week they got mixed up, and they kept sending me the Dalai Lama, the same one, over and over again. It was like, you didn't get it this time, so let me give it to you again. But it was a wonderful message about this, about determination, where he said it's one thing to understand the Dharma, study it and appreciate it and understand it, but it's much more subtle than that, and it takes a lot of determination and a kind of renunciation of being willing to give up something for it. That it's not just living our own sort of casual life and sitting every now and then, or going to Sesshin and then going home and I don't know, getting drunk in a bar on El Camino or something. But it takes a true pointing of the mind and body in a certain direction, the backward step that Dogen talks about, that we revise and reconsider our life. Not just with one big gesture, but subtly and carefully all day, every day. That it's that kind of determination of really sweeping when we're sweeping. That's all. It's really all we can do. I never heard of Kuda Pantaka before, but I appreciate him a lot. Our lives are only here for now. This is it. Are questions? Julian?
With this, I guess the whole idea of what's the heart sutra, no goal, and then this notion of determination. Is it that kind of seeing that whole seeing through the five skandhas is, because I'm grappling, and there seems to be the notion of authentic self in all this as well.
So it means if you're sweeping, that you sweep 100%. It's that kind of determination. If you've got the broom in your hand and you've got a dirty floor, then you sweep the floor. It's nothing fancy.
Okay.
And if you sit, you just sit. You don't wander off and think about what you're going to do next or how great you were last night or anything like that. You just sit where you are and be there. So it sounds simple, but it's hard to keep in place this way. and hard to keep our values in balance about our life and ourself. So it's not theoretical.
Okay. No, in terms of necessity for, like, planning, I mean, in a monastery, in some ways, not to take anything, but, like, in some ways, it is kind of easy because you have this all there. I mean,
well, it looks easier. I doubt it is, but it's harder here because we have so many decisions to make.
There's that pressure to figure out what to do with your time. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we try to do too much. I think one of the things that happens is, certainly in my life, and I think in most people's lives, that we have so many things to choose from, and that it's so easy to get greedy about it and not allow ourselves time to breathe and to rest and to just be without running around and doing so many things. We feel compelled to do so much. And when we meet people, we ask each other, what do you do? It's like we're supposed to be somebody by doing. And if you say, I don't do anything, it's very hard for people to know how to relate. And yet, I think we do much too many things. They're talking about doing away with the Sabbath in Europe because they still have Sunday off. The shops are all closed and the shopkeepers get a whole day off. And they're talking about how they could make a whole lot more money if they kept them open all the time. And it's a big social question because so many people want to keep the Sabbath, not for religious reasons, but because it's a day of rest. And otherwise, you know, if it's 24/7, that strange phrase that we use in this country now, 24/7, means we're doing it all the time. And I think what Dogen is talking about over and over in here is, where are you in all of this? Where is each one of us? How do we really live this Dharma if we're so busy? So the biggest choice is just choosing how to find our place of rest in the midst of a vigorous life. It's not that we should stop, but we can find a new way of doing what we do without being stressed. Samuel?
Here we go asking the same question every year about not getting better.
Yeah.
So this practice seems to make it easy for me to see how easily I stray and get lost so quickly. And it seems like the more diligently I try to practice, the more I see how easily I go on every second. In a way, it feels like home. Mm-hmm. Like just like trying to swim one lap to see how many strokes I can stay with it and not think about what I'm going to put with the lentils. You know, just stay with the stroke, girl. You know, oh, I can put that. It'll be so good. And here I'm excited. And then what happened to swimming? You know, and I've never noticed that before. I've never noticed that I do that. I thought it was fun. Time will pass. If I thought about what I'm going to put with lentils rather than think how many miles you're going to run or, you know.
Yeah.
So it seems like we're going backwards. The more you practice or the more you sit,
the more you become present to your own real actual life, you begin to see what you're doing. See how your mind is working and how it is or is not connected with your body, which is the reality. So you could say it's progress, actually.
But I thought we don't.
Well, but you're saying you're noticing more and more.
Yes.
And I think that's what happens when we practice. We become more and more aware of how it is, how it works, mm-hmm. how we are, our own particular way. And as soon as we have, it doesn't mean we get all better, mm-hmm. but we have a great deal more clarity.
Right.
We can see through what we're doing and not take it so seriously. You can let the lentils go when you notice it. You know, you don't cling to them anymore. So it's a much more free life. Though we're not, we can't pretend that we're so perfect anymore. You know, most of the reason our mind wanders is because we become, we get hit by little, hard to explain, things that happen or things that pass through our mind hit a place where we feel vulnerable or afraid or anxious. And we immediately go off into another world. We think of something else. And so swimming, and then I think of something that happened yesterday that made me feel uncomfortable. And so I start thinking of what I'm going to put in the lentils so that I don't feel the pain of whatever that was. But once you begin to realize how that's working, then you can realize that we're constantly trying to cover up the things that make us uncomfortable. And yet the things that make us uncomfortable are still there. It's like sitting zazen when things come up. If you keep turning away, it just from the pain in your knee, for instance, it just gets more and more. And it's only when you finally turn around and face it that it becomes something else. It's not something out there plaguing us anymore. It's just part of the whole picture.
Yes. And I don't know if that's connected, but I guess it doesn't matter. The excitement of the newness of this practice, I remember at the beginning, you know, somebody said, oh, you should sit 20 minutes or half hour, you know, stick by the book and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, no, you know, 15 minutes or whatever, not looking at the clock, okay, it's time to get up, and it's okay. It's almost like you've given yourself the license or the freedom to break away from that's a good amount of minutes to sit, or more might be better. So what I guess what I'm trying to say is I take it for granted and kind of not so strict with myself.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's nice, but in a way, it's like what happened to the dedication and the excitement of that newness of something. Can you talk maybe from experience about that, or how do you... I guess it's like relationships, you have to work on it, I know. But then you start thinking of, oh, maybe I'll try this other Vipassana thing, you know, mm-hmm. that'll bring a little more excitement in it. But this is fine. Why? Why shop around?
Well, this kind of practice where we meet once a week and then sit for 15 or 20 minutes during the week is thin. It's And I that's why we have sesshin, because sesshin then is a much more nourishing practice, you could say. And once you set sesshin and come back into the ordinary everyday sitting part, then that encourages and nourishes your sitting for quite a while. So I think we go in and out of intense practice. But if we only just practice like this, it usually isn't enough. And then we begin wondering or feeling around, or one way you can solve it is to give yourself a day of practice or a weekend of practice. Go away to Vajrapani or someplace, which is a wonderful thing to do, and discover your own rhythm of sitting and walking and maybe studying and drawing or singing or something.
So is it safe to say, true to say, that when one starts wandering around, it's like, okay, you're not, or
yes,
you're not practicing this enough to really see that we got enough right here?
Yes, yes. It's really up to us to, if this were a Zen center, we could offer sitting every day, the way they do in Arcata, every afternoon, every morning. You can go to the Zendo and sit with other people. There aren't talks, but there's a service, I think, in the morning. It's very nice, and then you go off to work or you go to school or do what you like. We don't do that because we don't have a place to do it. So it, when I say thin, it's not because we're not all very dedicated and very sincere. It's just that we don't have the means to practice together very much. And that's so helpful. So the study group helps. That's Julian's very good idea to bring us together over and over so that we can do things besides the Tuesday night. And sesshins are a wonderful encouragement. I do know that. But we get antsy because we want, you know, it's not new. It becomes new the longer you sit. If you're sitting for 15 minutes, it doesn't get new. It's not a time enough to get into it, really. So there's that aspect also. It can be very fresh. Even if you've been sitting for 40 years.
Yeah, I didn't mean it to sound like I'm bored with this. I'm just interested in everything.
Well, sure.
I am.
Me too.
Sincerely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm reading the Dalai Lama. Mm. Same thing.
My thoughts on that. I think if you dig deep enough into the practice, it's pretty much all like there. I mean, I think maybe it helps, like Dalai Lama, and you know, I think it does ultimately all come back to the practice too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. Maybe different kinds of words.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, we're all sweeping. We all have a broom in our hand in some way. Sometimes they say, enjoy your practice. And that sounds like a funny thing, but really, sweeping? Enjoy your sweeping. We don't know how long we have to do it.
Well, in America, we normally have a shovel in our hands and a broom behind us, so we're all going very fast.
That's what I mean, Russ. Exactly.
Tracking right along.
Yes, tracking.